do your part to reduce food waste and recycle right. Reduce food waste and save money by planning your meals for the week before you go shopping. Check your refrigerator and freezer to avoid buying food you already have. Recycle right by keeping plastic bags, foam containers, batteries, and garden hoses out of your recycling bin. Learn more at GoRecycle.org. Brought to you by the City of Falls Church, City of Fairfax, Arlington County, Loudoun County, and Prince William County.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.
Javier, go for it. Unmute.
Yeah, man. It's a microphone. It works well when we test it. Then we go live and it doesn't.
Hey, you sound great now. You know what? And that's what matters. Now. Right now. Everybody, welcome to Cannabis Insider. It is Tuesday. It is almost June. This is your last day of May. I hope you spent it wisely. If you didn't, you got all of June to make up for it. And you know how you do that? Is by reading Javier Haas, Benzinga.com/cannabis, 40 articles a day. That's how you do it. If this is your first time tuning in, drop a one in the chat. If you are an avid listener or if you listened once before, drop a two. Either or is fine. We prefer you be avid listeners, but we'll take either. Javier, as always, my friend, we got some great news to chat through, some interesting topics. We're going to talk to an international powerhouse CEO today. Going to be super exciting. Cannot wait to get that going. And then lastly, we're going to finish off with an interview I had with Gary Santos, CEO of Tilt Holdings, last week on his performance thus far this year. So exciting day for us all. We're talking to AKAN on the NASDAQ and TLLTF on the OTC. But first and foremost, we're talking to Javier Haase, the Argentinian action figure. What is happening today in cannabis?
Should we do a little bit of a spoiler on our newsletters and what's coming up?
Yes. Yeah.
Can you tell people? No, you go. Yeah. It's an Ellie thing. Come on.
Yeah. So y'all, we have two daily newsletters. One that Javier has been running for all of you guys for years. It's Cannabis Insider, hence the name of our show. We are keeping the name of our show. We have a second one. If you are not subscribed, Cannabis Daily. If you're not subscribed to any cannabis newsletter, I'm so sorry you've been missing out all this time. It's time to fix that and subscribe. But Javier provides wonderful headlines. We have several podcasts that we include in there and a bunch of resources to make you all better traders, better investors, and all around just increase your individual wealth. Who doesn't want that? So Cannabis Daily newsletter will be how we move forward starting on Monday. If you're subscribed to Cannabis Insider, you will be moved over. If you're not subscribed today. So that's exciting. Javier, though, let's dive into some news, man. They're here to hear about cannabis. Y'all, let us know if you're here. Chat silent right now. We need more of you.
Yeah, what's up? What stocks do you want to hear about? Here's an in case you missed it from last week, just because we were off Monday. I want to do four quick items, no commentary needed. Then we can go into some of these week's news. Canopy Growth stock dropped after the Q4 earnings report where there was a revenue decline. Canopy Growth, CGC. Following the report, Cantor Fitzgerald maintained a neutral rating on Canopy Growth, lowering the price target from $6 to $6.75 Canadian.
I would have sworn they would have done a sell on that one.
A what?
I would have sworn Pablo would have done a sell. I'm not saying he should have. I'm just saying I thought he would have. Is all I'm saying. Regardless, that's interesting news to me because he didn't.
Yeah, no, I mean, being sell on Canopy is a little bit bearish. You can be neutral. I think neutral is fair in terms of what we know of Pablo Swanish's position regarding Canopy, regarding Canadian LPs, regarding the opportunity in the U.S. However, you know, it's hard to go bearish Canopy, right?
You like CGC? Yeah, if you like CGC, drop your thoughts in the chat. We'd love to hear from you. CGC on the NASDAQ, Canopy Growth, obviously one of the OG big time stocks in the space, had a rough earnings report. Pablo Zuanich, one of the lead analysts, remains neutral. Mm-hmm. I think that's super interesting and a tell for the brand name of Canopy, personally.
Agree. Well, since we're against the clock, I'll skip some of the other news items from last week. You can check news out of the FDA and Harborsite earnings on benzinga.com/cannabis. I want to share one news item that I'm particularly excited about, and then I'll let Elliot share some of his favorite headlines of the week. Woo-hoo. For the biggest news of the past week, and I mean like, you know, 7 days, was Argentina's new law. The president finally signed and enacted the new medical cannabis and industrial hemp law in Argentina, finally opening the market for private players. Up to this point, it was only home growing or caregiver models, and industrial grows were limited to those done in partnership with some kind of state entity, with some kind of government entity. The new law opens up the game and really seeks to favor cooperatives and small businesses. And it's very interesting, right? It seeks to create an industry in Argentina, which is one of the biggest economies in Latin America. And also Argentina has been for over 100 years one of the largest exporters of agricultural goods in the world, right? Wow. Right now, most of the economy is driven by soybeans, but they're looking to change that for several reasons related to the environment and in general, like, you know, diversification. They're betting hard on the hemp industry as a way to generate jobs and export value-added products, not just hemp itself, but processed and value-added products to generate, foreign currency.
I have questions. Yes. So it sounds like they're making it difficult for some of these large Latin American public players to jump in, right? A Chiron, a Farmacielo, an Avicanna. Is there an entrance for them to this market that we should be looking for?
There is, definitely. I mean, there's an opportunity for sure. We still need to see what the actual rules are. They created this entity that will ultimately regulate the industry. We don't have that quite yet. But what we do know is they will have a place as well, right? The only thing the law tries to do is protect the cooperatives and smaller local entrepreneurs as well, right? Not to avoid seeing what we've seen in so many parts of America and in Canada, where you know the laws came with promises of inclusion, but then you know there were no rules to ensure that. So,
yeah,
very excited.
That's interesting, man. Anything else you want to say to that, or can I drop a little bit of rapid fire legislative action? First and foremost, California marijuana tax revenue to date has reached $4 billion. $4 billion in tax revenue from California cannabis. Figures have stalled over the last 18 months, apparently, and they're flat month to month overall. But that is a massive number. So I just wanted to call that out. California, though, not really trending well. I would say California cannabis overall. You know, I like the tax, the cultivation tax break that Gavin Newsom's looking to enact. But something interesting that I heard was start to look for MSOs who are struggling in other states to look for a break in California, to start acquiring more licenses in California. And I don't know if that's fair to the MSOs. I think you have to remains to be seen and take that type of a stance for a little while. But it is an interesting thought to think that California might be a last resort for some companies in a bearish market right now. And I didn't think we'd ever say that. Yeah, isn't that a statement? Yeah, that's quite the statement, honestly. With that, I thought that was interesting. Lauren Boebert trying to talk about cannabis and failing. That's all I'm going to say about her. outside of that, Javier, any kind of lasting thoughts you want to add to this lawsuit from Abner Curtin and some of these other MSOs? One thing that I could use some clarification on, if you want to help me out here, was they are looking to challenge 280E. You know, it's kind of an obvious one. As anybody that's going against the federal government should do. But what they're also looking to do is to keep the government from impeding interstate commerce. What does that mean? That sounds the opposite of what I thought it would be.
I mean, basically what they say is, you know, keep the government out. This is what you promised. This is what you promised in several different amendments and laws and protections, right? And even in discourse, right? The federal government again and again has avoided to go for full federal legalization, even federal decrim. But the one thing that they've always promised is, okay, we'll stay out of state-run programs. But they aren't really staying out because there are so many federal agents is still imposing all kinds of barriers to the industry, even where they are state legal, even when they're just medical, right? That you know, honestly, I do see why it makes sense for Abner and his team to be.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I completely agree. And Obi, why would we focus on wheat stocks on a show called Cannabis Insider? With that being said, man, I don't disagree with you. The illegal market is massive obstacle is a massive understatement, for what it is for cannabis.
I mean, we can always be shorting cannabis stocks for all we know.
A lot of federal intervention would help that. A lot of tax breaks would help that. You know, there's a lot of things that could come to be that could help that. And I think ignoring some of the major industry players right now is a massive, massive miss on some value opportunities. That being said, no financial advice. All right, Javi, anything else you want to get to before we announce our awesome guest for the day?
Let's do it. Let's do it. Talking about cannabis stocks. Here is a good one. Aaron, shall we roll the credits and then introduce him?
All right. All right. We got Tej Virk, CEO of Aconda. What is going on, my friend? Welcome to Cannabis Insider. How are you? Oh, you're muted.
Can't hear you. Oh, there's.
There we go. I'm back. Yeah. Sure. Elliot Javier, thanks. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course, my friend. NASDAQ, AKAN. But that's a new ticker, a newer ticker, I should say, over the last few months, man. How is it to be a CEO of a NASDAQ traded company? How is it different? I mean, do you sleep better at night? Do you sleep worse?
I forgot what sleep feels like. but it's fun, right? That's the important thing. You know, we're making a difference. And we're so at the beginning of this journey in our part of the world that it's exciting. Every day is just an adventure.
You know, this is one of my favorite topics to talk about, you know, in general, like cannabis on a global scale and global footprint. You are currently running a company that trades in the NASDAQ in New York City, even though you're calling in from the UK, from London right now. And Aconda operates in Southern Africa as well. Can you tell us a little bit about Aconda and how you get this massive geographical footprint while so many others are focused maybe on one specific market?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, part of the strategy behind Aconda draws from my experience actually working at other large and smaller scale cannabis companies. So a couple you mentioned earlier, like Canopy Growth and Chiron, I was an executive at both companies. And now at Aconda, we founded an international medical cannabis and wellness platform, which is really focused on this EMEA corridor. So Europe, Middle East, Africa. And our asset base is spread across exactly as you mentioned, Southern Africa, Portugal, and the UK. And we're vertically integrated. It's different from the others because we're based here. We're focused on this supply chain, which we call the seed to patient supply chain. And what's interesting is it's all kind of in the same time zone. I don't have to worry about calling Australia or the West Coast, United States or Vancouver. We can really focus on what's happening here. Management is all based in this time zone. And that lets us really solve the problems, which are really a growing market with inconsistent supply and inconsistent quality. It's not great for patients, not great for the emerging consumer.
Now, Aconda, you know, when entering Portugal, this was a while ago, mind you. So I'd like to hear how your thoughts on this statement actually are today. But some operators from, say, Canada got into Portugal as an entrance into the German market, as basically a way to pave their path into the largest consumer market in Europe. does that fact remain true with your views on Portugal, or how do you view Portugal and how do you view your expansion into the rest of Europe?
So I think it's a great and pertinent question. So Portugal, from our perspective, is a center for excellence within Europe when it comes to cannabis. Germany was the first country to legalize medical cannabis for prescription. We saw that happen in 2017, and that was led by the patients wanting to get that access. Portugal was a fast follower. I think the government, the regulators, they did the right thing in taking a proactive approach in quickly coming up with legislation that allowed for cultivation, manufacturing, and I think that really speaks to Portugal's history in being a leader in drugs policy. So in the early 2000s, Portugal decriminalized all drugs, and so I think there's been a positive social impact from that. And I think as it stands, having been an early mover, Portugal's assembled a fantastic base of assets. And so we've acquired one, this state-of-the-art, one-of-a-kind indoor premium grow, which I want to come back to. Very rare within this entire EMEA region. But I also want to talk about this, the talent base that's available. You've got a lot of pharmaceutical professionals, a lot of fantastic growers. Portugal has a rich agricultural background as well. So it acts as the perfect bridge, or as we refer to it, our EU hub, into the market. Remember, Portugal sits within the European Union. Everything that happens here falls under the European Commission rules, the European Medical Authority rules. So you have kind of this kind of equivalent of an FDA framework to follow. And so that makes it easier for making it an export hub, as well as servicing the domestic market, which I think is another opportunity.
That's an awesome breakdown of Portugal. Thank you. And I'm going to latch on to the one thing you said about Germany. Sorry to do that. So you know, looking at Germany and looking at their patient, their clinic, their model, and you were a part of Chiron. So you may have been a part of them setting up that infrastructure of all those clinics in Germany and knowing all those clinics. Do you have to look at that when it comes to these medical markets and how to expand and getting into these pharmacies, getting in front of these doctors? Do you focus on that type of education at Aconda?
Yeah, so I think medical education is a really important topic. It's going to help with the continued destigmatization and adoption of cannabis by patients, by doctors. So all of that is happening. At Aconda, we're focused a little bit less on the education layer. We're really focused on the supply chain. So that seed to patient, where we've got the cultivation and manufacturing, the distribution channels. So the cultivation lies with South Africa and Portugal. The distribution channel is through our own channel, Canmart in the UK. And then also we have partners in Germany and other parts of Europe that we're going to be working with more closely. And then on top of that, there are clinics. So we do work with some clinics now. The most notable one is a fully digital clinic in the UK called Leva, which is taking a holistic approach to pain treatment and incorporating cannabis. Germany is a changing market. It's a dynamic market. We're definitely going to be involved there. I think that from our standpoint, we're going to make sure that we provide that consistent supply and consistent quality to make sure that physicians who are benefiting from the education that those great companies are providing actually have a product to prescribe. And I think that's still a choke point in all of this. And it's going to become exacerbated as we see things like legalization come down the pike. And that's also something that we need to be considering.
You know, you've been talking a lot about the supply chain, and I would like to understand better how this works, right? Because now that you acquired this Portugal asset, right, through the acquisition of Hologen, right? And you're producing cannabis in Portugal for export to the rest of the EU, and that makes it pretty simple. How does the Lesotho asset play into this, right? Like, why do you still have all these assets in Southern Africa? Are you still sending cannabis to Europe? How are these different? How are they the same? Are they supplying different markets? Are they used for different products?
Yeah, great questions. So the strategy behind the having both an asset in Lesotho, which is doing cultivation, and Portugal, is really about product segmentation, as well as feeding the different types of products that we're going to be bringing over time. So if we look at the two types of cultivation and manufacturing, in Lesotho, this is a large-scale outdoor grow operation with greenhouses as well. So that's a certain type of grow. It's going to yield a certain type of product. And then if you look at Portugal, we have a indoor premium grow. So this is one of the most scientific data-driven grows that I've ever walked into. It's able to grow at the grades that you see on the recreational market on the West Coast by some of the great hydroponic growers, but it's all done under this EU GMP pharma grade certification. And so what's great about this is that, first of all, the two assets fit like a glove. The product that we're growing in Lesotho can pass through to our Portugal hub and then be released as pharmaceutical grade. So we're following all of the compliant procedures there. So our Lesotho operation is GACP, Good Agriculture and Collection Practice. So that's the first synergy. Now let's talk about product segmentation. So we're talking about Portugal being our premium side. So we're just seeing the beginning of this product segmentation in this part of the world, because we've had so much inconsistent supply and inconsistent quality. It's been hard to see that differentiator that's happened in other markets that you've seen in the US and Canada, for example. With this asset, we're going to bring that premium product. On the Lesotho side, given the intrinsic advantages of climate, we're going to take advantage through greenhouse grow, and that's going to produce, I think, more of our value product, still high quality, but it is going to be a greenhouse product. So that's going to give us the product segmentation. It also gives us the scalability. So right now we're if I'm just talking about flower, we're creating a business that can be profitable within this precursor medical market, but because we have the scalability of Lesotho, which has, it's 500 acres, but I mean, that if we planted all of that, I mean, that would be one of the larger cannabis grows around.
Yeah.
It just gives that ability to participate in the long run. And that's all 1P supply. I haven't even talked about our ability to do 3P supply via our platform, because we have a lot of co-manufacturing capacity at Portugal. On products, distillates, vape pens, oils, this does not make up a material part of the market share in this part of the world. Now, you do see distillates and oils in Germany, but vape pens, still like early days. And part of this is a regulatory challenge. This is going to change over time. Some markets will allow for that. So again, having this large-scale outdoor grow is going to be able to provide us great feedstock for making great formulations for vapes.
Fantastic.
That's awesome. So in our last couple of minutes here, you know, what can we look for in the rest of 2022 as investors, as people that will put you on our watch list at the very least? What can Aconda, what are you all going to bring shareholders ideally in the coming months that you can speak to compliantly, of course?
Yeah, I think that, you know, for us, it's a focus on execution. We're going to show that there's a follow through of our business model. We've brought the company public based on our assets in South Africa as well as the UK, and then we did this transformative acquisition with Hologen, which we announced on 420, which is great timing. And now it's about showing that all of these assets fit together and generate revenue and create a business that is profitable in this market. And so sales execution is first and foremost. And then I think the other thing that we've already evidenced is that we've already partnered with brands. And so I think brand partnerships are going to continue. And that's another way that we're going to show that we're creating quality product that's different, and we're going to build out the market in this part of the world.
This is so interesting, man. The Portuguese market is something that we did not talk about enough. As far as I'm concerned, the European market is something we cover here and there, you know, as news comes out over here. But perhaps we can keep having you on and keep getting some interesting updates on the development of what you're doing over there, because this is fascinating.
Yeah, look, it'd be a pleasure. And things are moving. Germany is legalizing adult use recreational cannabis. It's going to have a knock-on effect across the rest of Europe. And I think there's just a challenge that the operators in the industry are going to need to follow. And we're very well positioned to solve this problem.
Awesome. Tej Virk, CEO of Aconda, NASDAQ listed AKAN. Really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us. I know it's evening your time. Thank you again for being with us.
Thanks, Ellie. Thanks, Javier.
Talk to you soon, Tej. Awesome. Javi, before we get to the video, man, didn't we just hear something from Spain about legalizing? Wasn't that a news item today? They were thinking about it. Check benzinga.com/cannabis.
So, I mean, the last I heard is a pretty limited initiative from Spain, where they wanted to offer it only in hospitals. And I mean, honestly,
that's kind of what Argentina was doing, pretty limited. Yeah. That's interesting. Interesting that he's not leading with education. And I like the honesty. I'm going to be honest with you. Some people, you know, everybody leads with education, but I'm going to be honest. A lot of people lead with bad education. So that's interesting to me that he's focusing on what they do well and he's building an ecosystem of seed to patient. Javier, any last words you want to put toward Aconda, toward Cannabis Insider before we hop?
Honestly, Harry. Looking forward for Germany's legalization, I think Berlin will become even more fun. So, Capital Conference, Berlin 2023.
Yes, I love it. You're going to see Javier and Elliot over in Berlin before too long, it sounds like. Awesome, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in. Appreciate it so much. Hope you're having a great week. Hope you had a great Memorial Day from the U.S. If not, enjoy your the rest of your week. I guess we'll say. Javier, stay tuned for this next part.
Bring on Larry.
All right, y'all. With CEO and president of Tilt Holdings that is OTC listed, TLLTF. Let's bring him on over. Let's chat about what's going on in the mighty world of Tilt. What's up, Gary?
Not much. How you doing, Elliot?
I am good as always, man. You are, I think you might be one of the top executives that we host on this show, but for good reason. I feel like you guys are always doing something innovative in this industry. So, you know, let's chat about it. Let's start with something fun. And you have been CEO of this major cannabis company for a year. Talk to us about your experience. Obviously, you've been through a lot. So I'll let you take that question however you want.
Yeah, you know, it's been really wild. You know, coming up, you know, through the ranks, there's always that moment. Say, man, if I ran this place, you know what I would do? And then all of a sudden you're running the place. It's like, oh, my God, I have no idea what I'm going to do. So, you know, it's one of those where better to be one step removed. But seriously, it's been a blast. I mean, we've been able to put together a heck of a team, and it's been really humbling the talent we've been able to attract and the places we've attracted it from, all buying into the vision. And I know we're a little different than most MSOs in how we look at the market and where we're going. We were one of the first ones really touting the CPG as independent brand kingmaker, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, and now we hear everybody talking CPG. So even that's flattering to take an idea and watch it suddenly become part of the mainstream conversation. Still think we do it better than most as it pertains to that. But, you know, I've been really proud of the team and the stuff we've done. A lot of plumbing work that had to be done for a publicly traded company, but I suspect that's the same with a lot of these cannabis companies that went public through an RTO. But it's been a lot of fun. You know, I love it. I'm looking forward to the second year and see what we can do to start to really explode from there.
Amen, man. Well, best of luck to the second year. And I think I couldn't agree more with you in terms of the talent you've attracted. It's been super impressive. But, you know, give us a little bit of no hold back here. What you can say, what has been the hardest part? What's the biggest question you've had to answer as CEO? And of course, I'm not trying to get you to break compliance structure here, but, you know, just to give our investors a little insight about what you've dealt with as a public company in cannabis.
You know, I think the biggest thing has been trying to show both insiders and outsiders to the industry that some of the basic rules of business can still apply even in cannabis. Why we're all here and the origin stories, oh, they can be very dramatic, very different, very defining. And I think the passion is what really separates this industry from so many others, that there's just so much passion at the most entry levels for why people are here, why they're doing what they do. But when you are fueled by that, you can't just start saying, well, budgets don't matter and you know, responsible growth doesn't matter. You don't want to take the passion away completely and just make it a complete Harvard business case. Mm-hmm. But if you can apply some of, you know, the basic business premises together with that compassion, you have a chance to really catch lightning in a bottle in this industry more than most others. And then showing those folks how a budget can work, showing those folks what production per square foot can yield and how it's not really selling out, but actually selling up. People start to get excited. We just had a strategy session in Cambridge just yesterday, frankly, with our corp development and our sales teams. And it's pivoted so much from why do you want to do that to, oh, I can't believe we're doing that. Let's do this too. So I think that's been the most fun part, the most rewarding part, and probably the most difficult part all at the same time.
Interesting. No, great insight there, man. Thank you for that. So let's dive into your first quarter. There's some seasonality at play here. I think we know that as those who are entrenched in cannabis quite a bit. Some consistent decrease across the board from Q4 to Q1. Anything you think investors should know and should look at when seeing an earnings report for Q1, what are you doing in Q1 that may take the anxiety away from shareholders?
Yeah, I think the first thing you have to do is don't look at all MSOs equally. And whether you're looking at us, whether you're looking at other MSOs, just one-to-one, I've talked to a few investors that they pretty much do that. They say, well, I know what so-and-so is doing in this state, and I'm just going to assume they'll do that in all their states. It's like, you can't really. So you look at us, and we're concentrated in Massachusetts and Pennsylvania, two of the more challenged states, really, in the first quarter. So when you don't have that kind of diversity, the question is, all right, what's going on within those states? What's going on within their production line that should give me comfort that they're going to be able to snap out of this? And for us, it's been the brand part of the business, the B2B. So when we take a look at selling our own branded product or selling just bulk flour or bulk distillate, certainly we've seen softness like everybody else. But on all of our brand partners, so Old Pal, Her Highness, Arrow, 1906, those have been solid. Those are selling through everything. Those are holding their price points. So we're not doing any special buy one, get one free promotional items. And when you look at the hardware side of our business, I think that's the other piece that very few people understand, that that tends to be the great balancer for us. You know, it's not a very sexy margin profile, but it's profitable. It's like an annuity. Now, this particular go around, I think there was a crossover in that a number of our customers had exposure to New Jersey. So New Jersey slowing down, rolling out adult use, sort of slowed down their buying habits. They bulked up in the fourth quarter and then had a lot of excess inventory on hand for empty vape carts and power packs. So I think you do have to dig in a little bit more, take a look at what the exposure is. But when you hear all these companies saying, hey, I'm seeing a turnaround or I'm expecting a great second half, what do they really have that's making you believe that the second half could be stronger? Is there something they're doing organically? Are they just a slave to what's going on in the market itself? Are they opening a new market? For us, we got a lot of cool things that are going to be going on in the second half that really we control. And if the market gets better too, that means we're just leaning in.
Any breaking news you'd like to share with us, Gary? I mean, we're open to it, just so you know.
You don't want to see me get to my second year as CEO, do you?
That's fair. That's fair.
No, I think what we talked about on our earnings call is we're probably going to launch roughly about another 30, 35 SKUs with our brand partners over the next two quarters.
Wow.
On top of that, all of our new strains that we planted, so about 30 new strains between Pennsylvania and Massachusetts, those are all going to start becoming harvested around June, July. So hitting the market somewhere in that third quarter to fourth quarter. And these are all high testing, north of 30% THC strains, a lot of which came from California, that I think people are going to really embrace. And we'll be opening up our final dispensary, or say our third dispensary in Cambridge, our medical only dispensary. So we've got those organic catalysts that, all things being equal, are going to give us a leg up. Especially then when you look at our production capacity, and in states like Pennsylvania, where we went from 7 grams a square foot, growing to now we're up to, I think, about 30 grams on our way to 50 grams. So with the same assets and the same people, I'm growing better flower and more of it in a state like Pennsylvania where flower is still king.
That's fantastic. And, you know, to kind of circle back on your brands, the brand partner revenue was a term that was used in your earnings release a few times. Is that what you're referring to with Old Pal, Her Highness, you know, those companies that you work with?
That's correct. That's correct. So we try to segment it out because for the three retail stores we have, we do sell other third-party products out there. So we tried to separate and call this business line branded partner products. And that really kind of separates it out. It's about 30% of our wholesale revenue now, and that's with about 17 SKUs. So we're going to more than triple that in the next few months. So that should start to take an outsized position.
Awesome. You also recently established partnerships with Timeless Refinery and Toast, right, in Q1, I believe. Do you want to mention anything about those?
Yeah. So, I mean, Timeless is busy at work right now in our Ohio facility. They do some of their own production. So we look forward to bringing their products in probably, I think, mid-June.
Okay.
We'll start seeing that in Ohio, and that's a SKU-starved market. So between 1906, who just left Ohio having done their production run, both of those products should be hitting mid-June. Toast is hard at work. In fact, they're doing a training session with our team in Massachusetts for their slices. So they do pre-rolls, but then they have those really cool slices that look like a little cigarette. So it's a special piece of equipment that we had to purchase that we'll be using. So excited for that. And then what we signed right before earnings was with Black Buddha, which is a socially focused brand there with Roz McCarthy at the head. So we're excited to develop some product there. I think by the third quarter, we're looking to have something in market as well.
Fantastic. All right, Gary. So I think we have a good sense of where we are right now from Q1. Moving into Q2, you said some exciting things happening for the rest of the year. So we'll keep an eye out. But, you know, give us a little bit of an industry outlook right now. You know, when you look at Q2 industry-wide, you know, as a person who's been entrenched in cannabis for longer than most, do you feel like we could look at a little bit of an upswing after a down Q1? Or do you think, you know, investors kind of hold on a little bit, you know, let's get through this bear market and then we'll come out?
I think it'll be a bit of a ramp, right? Because obviously the lack of disposable income took a little bit of a hit, right? You lost those COVID stimulus checks. Then you have the inflation that's occurring. You know, we're starting to see a little bit more normalization, definitely from our B2B customers. Their buying habits are starting to increase again. Now, I think the way they're managing their inventory reminds me a little bit of those early days of COVID, where they're not loading up as much, but they're buying more frequently. So smaller purchases, but more frequently. To me, that's just responsible on their part. I don't know that you need a downturn to say that's a good way to run the business. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing those turns. I don't think it just flips a switch overnight.
Right.
It's going to take some time. I mean, from our perspective, we're assuming that it'll be a ramp into the second quarter and then sort of really get back on track around third and fourth quarter. The X factor continues to be whatever goes on down in D.C. Once again, safe banking seems to be hovering around the hoop again. So you know, I think there's more impetus to get that over the finish line than ever before. Mm-hmm. But we'll see, especially now with the markets as volatile as they are, for those who are already struggling with access to capital, it certainly hasn't gotten any easier.
Yeah, we could use a little help here from Capitol Hill.
It would be nice,
I'm sure, man. Awesome. Always good to have you, my friend. Gary Santos, CEO of Tilt Holdings, TLLTF. You got to check him out. They're one of the top dogs in the cannabis space. Always appreciate your time, my friend.
Pleasure as always, my friend. Take care.
All right.
Immersive technology has long been thought of as something that is primarily used by gamers and other entertainment applications. Billions of dollars have been spent on advancing the components that make up the technology, but it is still considered niche. Is it a technology that is in search of an application or just a killer app? To help me answer that question, I have with me today Mark Sage, the Executive Director of the Augmented Reality for Enterprise Alliance, or AREA. Visit mouser.com/empowering-innovation to listen to the full episode.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better? You really can do it, but nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to Beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say. It's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, Geico makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.